All right, welcome back to another edition of the Sunstone Podcast. I'm your host, John Larson, and we're here with another great group of folks that I've been really looking forward to talking to. And of course, I have some connection to this topic, and we'll get there in a minute. Welcome to the Mama Dragons. I'm facing down three of them right now, so I'm a little bit out of numbered. But you guys are an organization of mothers, I guess not necessarily, but you all are mothers of LGBT children. Yes.
Yes.
We're seeing a lot of head nods. So it's been something I really wanted to have you guys on here. So thank you for coming in, for sharing this part of your life with us.
Thanks for having us, John.
Thank you. Just as a matter of connection, we've kind of danced around this. I have two children who are both transgender. I have a transgender girl and a transgender boy. And my children are both autistic. They're on the spectrum. When we keep changing they're both very high functioning, very intelligent, very capable children. But I just wanted to lay that down as we go through here of where I'm coming at in this discussion. All right. So first of all, Lori, tell us just a little bit about yourself.
My name's Lori Davis, and I am a mom of a gay son. My son had a gender non-conforming childhood, meaning if it was pink and sparkly, that child reached out for it. And so I knew pretty early on that Zach was probably gay.
Now, was that something that you were like, were you one of those mothers who, I don't want to force them one way or the other, or where were you at in that?
So that was hard for me initially. When he was small and he wanted Barbies and he wanted to dress up, I didn't know if I should allow that. But fortunately for me, I had some really good support pretty early on. Our pediatrician referred us to a therapist, and basically my husband and I brought our little five-year-old son in and said, fix him. And the therapist said, we're not going to fix him because there's nothing wrong with him. He's not broken. But I will teach you guys how to support him and how to love him through these things. And that was kind of a game changer and a life changer for us. And through some other support groups, I got really brave to just support him in doing that. And it was really helpful for him as he grew up. He's 20 now and he's doing really well. So I was lucky to have that support when he was young because it made me brave and it made me able to do the things that he needed me to do.
Wow, wonderful. Colleen?
All right. So I have five children, and my oldest son is gay, and he came out when he was 14. And unfortunately, we hadn't had the kind of support that Lori did, and were very uber Mormon and did not understand anything about what it meant to be a gay young man in a very Mormon family and small town community. So it was a rough road for a while. We fortunately, after a few years of stumbling around and him really struggling, I did find the Mama Dragon, so that changed everything for me. And then a few years later, my middle child came out as transgender, so we now have a transgender daughter who is 17 also.
Well, fantastic. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Lisa?
I am Lisa Dame, and I have a lesbian daughter who is older. She's 33. She didn't come out until she was 27. And I'm having a little bit of an aha moment listening to Lori, because my daughter was also gender nonconforming as a child, but because she was a girl, it just looks like a tomboy. But she did have, it was more than a tomboy. She had like a summer where she said, I don't want to wear a girl's bathing suit. So it was before board shorts. So I bought her just a boy's bathing suit and a t-shirt. She, you know, just really did not do anything girly and didn't like anything girly at all, and quite disliked. We were very Mormon, and she quite disliked having to go to any, you know, girl stuff at church. Really disliked all the narrative around being a mother, being a wife. She would say to me, I don't think I want to get married. I don't think I want to have children. So I... You know, I allowed her to be who she was, for sure, but there wasn't the alarm, like when you have a little boy that wants pink and sparkles, like that's more alarming. When you have a little girl that just wants to be a tomboy, that doesn't feel as upsetting to you. But I knew in my heart that she was a lesbian, and it was just, I knew it was beyond that she was a tomboy.
Yeah, and there's a lot of forces, and we're gonna talk about them. Of course, there's the church and our broader culture in general, and it makes you confront with every one of these kids what it means to be a gender and our latent biases against gender, our latent biases against gender expression. And if you're a parent in this world, you're going to have to dig around in your psyche somewhat to confront your own prejudices. And I've seen that as with a transgender boy and a transgender girl. You know, with my boy, I felt more confident because I was a man. I could help him know what it meant to be a man. With the girl, I've had to elicit help from allies because I don't know how to engage that world. And I think the reason I bring this up now, it's whenever any of this happens, especially in a Mormon environment, you feel very, very lonely when you first find out.
You know, John, you bring up a good point, and it's honestly the reason why Mama Dragons was formed and why it exists, because I know for me, my son obviously came out when he was very, very young. I knew from the time he was very young, and the only thing that I wanted was to meet another Mormon mom who had an LGBT child. That's like the only thing that I wanted. And it was hard to come by. And that was really, it's really only been a few years, right? And it was really hard to come by. So I remember when I did meet my fellow Mama Dragons, how wonderful it was to feel like I was back into a community, because I felt so alone in my Mormon community.
So now, Laura, you were there kind of at near the beginning. So how long ago did the Mama Dragons start?
So the Mama Dragons actually started as an online thread. These were moms that I knew in real life, but there was an online kind of just a private message thread that was happening between some moms who were talking about the challenges between being Mormon and raising their kids. And they came into it because there was a lady that lived in American Fork that wanted to do a GSA, and she needed some help on how to form that. It's Gina Curbelo, and she is the one that actually started the Facebook group and then added, I think I was added right around maybe number 20 or so, added all us moms that were dealing with this. And it quickly became a place to talk about the challenges of navigating our faith and our LGBT children.
And to me, that's one of the core issues right now. Of course, in the last week, I think, we've had the church issue a statement where they said we support LGBT rights, but also we assert that our religious rights give us the privilege and the right to discriminate against people who are LGBT. And I see that, and the church has issued a lot of statements. We have the 2015 November policy where children of LGBT parents were not allowed to baptize, and then a reversal of that. What I try to remind my friends outside the church is this is not about you. In my view, right now, there's a battle going on inside the church for the heart and soul of Mormonism on the issue of inclusion versus exclusion. And those of us on the outside, we feel the violence of these proclamations and whatever, but they're not about us. They're not about our children. They're about who the church thinks it is. And that's why this is so important. I'm so glad you guys are here. So how did you guys find the Mama Dragons? Was it just on Facebook or through social connection or?
I my daughter had come out, and I was like Lori, where I felt completely alone. I'd actually never said out loud that I thought my daughter was a lesbian, even to my husband. I had just kept it inside of me because I didn't feel like there's anywhere to go with that. So after she came out, I was really ready for her to come out. She'd been engaged to a returned missionary. She'd I just had seen her struggle to be who she was. And once she finally came out to me, I was so happy. And I just said, can I tell everybody? I want to tell everybody. And so I was on some other Facebook, I think it might have been Mormon Stories podcast Facebook page. And I said something about a lesbian daughter. And then someone private messaged me right away and said, do you have a gay child? And then I went to lunch with that woman, and she was one of the original ones, Jill Rowe, that was the beginnings of Mama Dragons. So we met, and she told me that there was a group, and I was like, wow, like there's more of us. Like I thought I was by myself in this. It was just you and I. And so then that she invited me to go to the very first retreat they had, and I couldn't go then, but then I kind of lurked and watched and then eventually went to the next retreat. And that's how I found it, was someone reached out to me.
And my story was, my son came out at 14, and for 3 years I was like Lori, that I had nobody to talk to, and I struggled. And ultimately I found a great therapist at Lisa Hansen, who was in her PhD program at BYU, just to try and help this. So I got a little bit of insight, but my son ended up moving away from our home to live with an aunt, so he could be around some other people, and he couldn't go to this small town high school. And I called a friend after about 3 years. My son was probably a senior in high school, and I said, my son just, he had come out on Facebook, this guy, we were EFY counselors and speakers together, and he'd come out on Facebook, and I said, what would you want your mom to know? I don't know what to do. My son is just cutting us off, and he's struggling. And he said, you need to talk to my friend. She's in this group called Mama Dragons, and it was Wendy Montgomery. And I called her and talked for about 3 hours, and she said, we're having a retreat in St. George. There are going to be 50 women there, and you can come down. And I didn't know a soul, but I drove to St. George and put on my Barbara Walters and just start talking to all these women. And really, that was the first time I really understood what my son might have been going through, because so many kids were in the same situation in their Mormon families with parents who didn't understand. So that was the beginning for me. That was 4 years ago, and it's made all the difference. It's totally changed my life and my ability to support my gay child, and then later my transgender child.
Wow. So do any of you still engage the church at any level?
I do. I'm still an active member.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a struggle for me, and I say that I take it day by day and always give myself permission to leave if I need to. But my local leadership is pretty amazing, and they are super supportive of me and of my family, and my neighborhood is super supportive, and those are things that make it so that I can stay.
And I appreciate you bringing up the how it gets interacted with on the local level. Because so often, and I've been guilty of this, we use the church, the corporate church in downtown Salt Lake, as a stand-in for the people and the culture of Mormonism. And they're not the same at all. And it's been my experience that the people in the church are more tolerant, are more loving, and more forgiving than we give them credit for. But unfortunately, those people are not always the ones who rise to the top, right? We have a kind of a corporate American structure in our church, and it's sometimes the most aggressive, the most engaged, the people who really want it, who do that. I'm not trying to criticize the church. I'm trying to say that if you're struggling these, you probably have more allies than you recognize. And I'll give you my proof is every time the church flips on a major policy thing, the membership doesn't come up in arms against the church for being too liberal. They all celebrate like it's what they really want. And I will stand and defend the Mormonism that I grew up with, that even though it has its problems, it was a very loving, tolerant group for the most part. They would get up in sacrament meeting and spiel conservative sort of hostile doctrine, but they'd go home and then they'd be loving and caring to all their neighbors. That was my experience with the church.
But that is, yes, I agree with what you're saying. The problem is that we have children that are sitting there in the pews, in primary, in Sunday school, and so when something is damaging and nothing is said about that, they hear that silence, and that goes to affecting their psychology on very deep levels. And I had my daughter in church you know, made her go to Young Women, made her go to EFY, and not until later did I really understand the damage that did to her, where she was always feeling like, you aren't okay, there's something wrong with you. And so I agree with what you're saying. I love Mormons. I love people that are Mormon. And I attended faithfully and was just involved completely, all in, my whole life. And when my daughter came out, I started into a faith transition at that time. And then when the policy came out, the November 15th policy, I felt something break inside of me that day. Mm. And I knew that I would not remain an active member. I thought before that I could be a nuanced member, but at that point, something I knew I was, it was irreparable. And so I have, but I have five children and who are in various places in the church. And one's a returned missionary, one was preparing to go on a mission. And so I have let everyone have their journey, have their space. And I have been gentle about the way that I have transitioned out of the church, but now I am no longer attending at all.
And you bring up some important points that I didn't fully understand, but I think they're worth going over. Our society, like all societies, have kind of overt denotative things that we say. You know, we live in a society right now in America where men and women and people of all races and genders are equal. That's what we say, but it's not true. It's not true at all. And the problem is when you are in a minority group, you experience all kinds of walls and barriers and pushback and subtle negativity that the dominant folks don't see. And one of the reasons I want to go here is if we take kind of the history of homosexuality in the United States, really before the Cultural Revolution, it was seen as a criminal deviancy on the par of raping people or murdering people. I mean, this was all across our culture. And so it was very, very underground. And then from, you know, the Cultural Revolution that happened in the 60s to I don't know, well into the 90s, it was sort of this wink, nod, we know it's there, but it's an underground thing. We still would in mainstream culture, we would make fun of gay men, we would make fun of gay women, we would paint them as being broken or less than, we would paint them as being broken or deviant, even at the same time giving them lip service. I mean, take something like Three's Company, that show that was on in the 80s. The running joke was because there was three single people, man and two women, and because that wouldn't be allowed to a single man to live with two single women. This is the early 80s still. The storyline was he pretended to be gay, so his landlord would allow him to live with these two women. And of course, if you watch it now, on one level it's kind of progressive because it's putting the homosexual issue in front of us, but on the other issue, it's just gay joke after gay joke after gay joke after gay joke.
That was bad.
But the reason I bring this up is our children. Then we went to a stage where we really started pushing that it's not a choice, because it was a pushback on conservative culture to say being homosexual, and of course everything in our culture is about men, right? So the narrative was about gay men. It's not a choice. And that leads us to today, where we've sort of put this position assuming that kids know exactly their sexual orientation and what that means from the time they're born. Hell, it took most of us into our 30s at least to figure out sexuality, right? And that was with frequent practice. Like it's not an easy thing to navigate, and it's definitely not an easy thing to navigate when you're 11 and you don't fully understand what sex even means, and your body is starting to change, and society still puts negative things. So I have seen kids grow up in 100% supportive homes, who those kids still internalize self-hatred. They still don't like in the beginning that they're different. They want to be just be like everybody else. And as a parent, you don't always know this is happening. And, you know, we've started talking about some of the signs that we see now in retrospect. but didn't recognize them at the time, and nor even if I did would I know what to do with that information. So we're up against some huge, colossal cultural forces that make kids internalize self-hatred and other ill feelings about their own bodies that we may not even have households that promote.
Yep.
Absolutely. And that was something that was a part of my son's issues that I didn't understand. But my relationship with the church I've called a special kind of hell, because I have a son on a mission in Ukraine. I have two younger daughters who are very involved in church, and then I have this gay son and this transgender child. And so when my son came out, he went to the bishop before he even talked to me about it. We started to suspect it, but he had a girlfriend in sixth grade, so I knew he couldn't be gay. And so I kind of just, you know, wished that away, even though he was not into girl things, but he was into adult things. He was into design. We were building a home and he was 9. He's like, we need lever doorknobs. And he, you know, he was very into detail and he was into cars, and but in a way that was different than kids his age. But I still didn't think he was gay. I didn't understand. And I guess I didn't want him to be, but he was into fashion and photography. And the bishop said, you're not gay. You just have talents like fashion and photography, and it'll bless your life if you don't listen to the world. Well, he was 14 years old, and this was devastating to him because he didn't feel understood or supported. But this, for him, that's when he began feeling a lot of anger inside of him at the church, at our family, at me as his mother, because I wasn't getting it. I never thought he chose it or could change it, and I thought the answers would be inside the church. So I started sending him articles. Look, this guy married a girl. And I've apologized a million times. I don't know if he's forgiven me, but I've really tried. Anyway, so...
You mean sort of the mixed orientation marriages?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I would see something in the church that was a teeny bit more progressive, where they actually admitted that somebody could be gay, but, you know, they would put the ones out front that, of course, stayed in the church, and they made it work, whatever that meant. And so that was my way of trying to find information and support him for a few years. So then once I found the Mama Dragons, that shifted. But my relationship with the church at that point also shifted, because that was the first time that I thought, they are wrong. They're wrong on this issue. They're hurting people. And I saw all of the damage to the families and these children who had wanted, just like everyone else in the church, to just be a part and to someday get married in the temple and have a family. And all of a sudden, everything changed for me there. But I still had these other kids who were living the script and were happy in the church. So I've tried to balance that. I was teaching gospel doctrine on a God is no respecter of persons. And I talked about my son for the first time, and he'd been out for 4 years, and I got released that week. So my ward, I live in a small town in Heber. I'm also the mayor. People haven't known how to deal with me because I have been very vocal about this issue, but I also have a kid on a mission. So I watched them celebrate my straight kids, and my kid on a mission was loved and accepted and thrived. And then I've watched how my other kids, it's kind of like they don't exist. People don't know how to deal with it.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up. I'm glad you're willing to stand up. The military did a rather famous survey back in the 90s. Because they were trying to figure out what to do. Now, the military, if you look at American history, I generally am not a big fan of the military. I'm kind of a pacifist myself. But they tend to be very progressive because they have a mission, and their mission is clear. And any kind of baloney that doesn't hit their mission, they tend to jettison real quick because people literally die. So the military was the first place to treat... To you know, start allowing African Americans in. It was the first thing to desegregate, because, you know, they found it was better. And in the 90s, they did a survey, because they were trying to decide, do we bar homosexuals from the military or not? And I remember the number one piece that they came away with is that individuals' attitude about homosexuality really hinged on one factor, and only one factor. It's if they knew somebody. Yeah. If there was somebody, if they could take it out of the realm of the abstract. And I like what you bring up, because the real war between those of us who want acceptance for LGBT kids and adults and those who don't is silence. What they want more than anything is for you just to be quiet.
Yes.
And if you're a gay kid and you're not going to talk about it, you're welcome. If you're a gay, if you're a mama dragon and you don't make waves. But the beauty is they set the bar so low that all we have to do basically is wear like a rainbow pin at church, and you'll have people eventually come up to you and say, So you know, do your flag at Pride or give your testimony about your gay son. You don't even have to say I support him or I don't support him. Just say I love him, and you will find Pete. You will find new friends right away. And that's the beauty of this. All we have to do really to make the most impact for our first battle is to stand up and say we're here. And that's what they don't want. If you look at their policy, they want everybody to be quiet.
Yes, and a lot of people are quiet. But it's been great to have the support, because it's scary sometimes at first to stand up and to wear the rainbow ring. I mean, all those years and I finally said something in church, that was scary for me. And there were most of people looked away. Like, I thought if I had said, my son has cancer or he was in a car accident, they would have rallied around me and they would have followed up and said, how is he? Is he doing okay? Here's a casserole. But instead, mostly it was silence. There were a couple people that would whisper, I have a gay nephew and I love him. Like, it was this confession, but they could whisper it to me because I was safe. But in a conservative community where no one was talking about it, it was hard for me at that point to speak up. So now I'm in a position of power in the community, and we're going to have some rainbow flags on our main street during June this month. This year is going to be interesting. But I've been able to have LGBT youth events, but mostly it's silence. There's people that come up and say, thank you so much, but mostly silence.
Absolutely. And I should put a caveat for anybody listening. I don't want you to feel shamed into breaking your own silence. These things are very tender and they're very, they need to be addressed carefully, and you should not give them the power until you're ready. Absolutely. So it is, I give everyone permission to stay in the closet, either as parents or families, as long as you need to. But know that once you come out, that there are people and there are support for you. So when you guys get the new young scared mothers coming in, what's the first thing we do to comfort them?
I actually was I was looking at the vetting. So we have our Facebook group, we do vetting. So we have people that ask to join the group, and then we have people that are assigned to be vetters. But those of us that are an administration on the Facebook group can jump in at any time. And I happened to be looking at it this week, and a man asked to join, which, you know, it's only mothers or women that are in a primary mothering role. So we don't have men in there, or grandmothers mostly, or aunts, uncles, cousins. You have to be a mother. So a man asked to join, and I happened to know this man. And just some from mutual friends, I'd met him a few years ago when I lived in Boston, and he said his son had just come to him and said that he was transgender, a teenager. And so I started a conversation with him, and I had to tell him, you know, you can't be in Mama Dragons, but there's a dragon dads, and then there's another one that does affirming fathers. Dave Jensen does that group. So there is support. And then there's also I'll Walk With You, which is a Facebook group for mothers and fathers. So I was pointing him to some of those, you know, those areas. But he, you know, so this is kind of a different story because, you know, working with a father, and he said he's, you know, feeling very afraid. The son hadn't come out to the mother yet, so he was worried about how that was going to go. He felt, you know, he was worried about loss of community. He was worried about how the other younger children in the family would respond. He was wondering, should we have him continue to attend church? Is that going to be okay for him? Just those are some of the questions that come up. And everyone's in a very different place, and that's all completely okay.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I want to validate your decision to block men out.
Thank you.
especially as a father who I'm rather heavily involved in the primary care of my children for various reasons. They have a lovely supporting mother, but there's been times that I've had to take the lead in navigating the healthcare system for various reasons. In our culture, men's voice is the one that you are required to listen to, right? And we've all been conditioned on that front. And it takes years and years to break that conditioning. So I really think that your decision is absolutely correct. And I'm really disappointed in our society in general on how we don't have the support networks in place for men anymore. Not that we ever did for things like this, but that's not your problem to solve. I know coming at it as a male, you know, I've encountered some issues, you know, like them not assuming that I'm a caregiver or asking me what I'm doing on campus. But those issues are not as big as the ones that you're going to receive being silenced and not having a connection to the authority inside the church. So for anybody who's going to criticize you for not having men in, you have my endorsement and blessing. But I do think that we as men need to get better at making those connections. And men are kind of broken in our society. And unfortunately, they're taking it out on all of society. But they're broken in that they don't have good social, emotional connections with other men. And oftentimes, they don't have good connections with women outside of sexual relationships. So keep that out of your business.
we're very comfortable not having men in our group. Trust me.
We'll stay in our lanes.
Yeah. And I do think that men have a difficult time being vulnerable with each other. Mm-hmm. And this is a very vulnerable space. And especially when you have a trans son transitioning to female, as you well know, that is a super vulnerable place for a man to be in. I know he'll reach out. He's already started reaching out to find that support. And we want everyone to find support wherever they are at. And sometimes I have moms that'll say, I just read stuff. I don't comment. And I'm like, that's fine. Like it's here for you in whatever way you need to use this. We've had moms that have come in and have said, this group feels anti-Mormon to us. And we have said, we warn people and we say, we allow people to be angry at the church here. There's sometimes no other space for them to do that. And so we will allow that, but we don't bash the church just to be angry at the church. We only talk about LGBTQ issues as it relates to the Mormon church. But if it feels anti-Mormon to you, there are other groups for you that are more affirming of Mormonism. This group is not about affirming Mormonism. This is about supporting mothers to support their children. That's it. That's what we're doing.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Anson Park, Executive Director of the Sunstone Education Foundation. I want to invite you to our weekly Sunstone Firesides. Do you remember those? Firesides that they used to have dating all the way back to the 1930s, when the LDS Church would hold monthly meetings to discuss really important gospel topics. Those meetings became known endearingly as Firesides. In January of 2019, Sunstone launched a new podcast that incorporates a nod to these Firesides. Featuring a weekly evening podcast, it will display a range of hosts, all women, as they chat with diverse guests from across the Mormon spectrum. The hosts are all female-identifying that represent a broad perspective in Mormonism. These podcasts will be released every Thursday evening, so you can have that fireside feel brought right into your living room. So grab a cup of cocoa or coffee, since at Sunstone there is more than one way to Mormon. Snuggle up under a blanket and listen to incredible interviews by and from incredible people. You can support women and their work in Mormon studies, which is desperately needed, by donating at sunstone.org or becoming a monthly subscriber. Go to sunstone.org and click on the podcast tab for more info. We hope you enjoy it as much as we do.
So let's talk. We talked a little bit about the signs, the things that we wish we would have noticed or we could have supported. What are the things that a young parent, when they start seeing in their children, they might want to keep their eye on?
You know, definitely the gender nonconforming issue. Lots of kids will have that gender nonconforming childhood, and that'll be the first sign for sure.
And I think, yes, and I think one of the things you want to watch out for is if the gender nonconforming is happening secretly. So as I've talked to parents, you know, they'll find some panties in their son's drawers. Or they'll find that, you know, there's a Barbie hidden underneath the bed. that for a lot of especially liberal folks, it's the idea of we're not going to raise them anyway, and they'd be very supportive of that. But even if you're in that home, the kid might be engaging in shameful behaviors. So I would say the first thing you want to look out for is the kid expressing shame around this stuff.
Yeah, I want to definitely talk, and we all do, about mental health. As we've spoken about, this can very adversely affect a child's mental health. It's interesting. Each one of us have talked about knowing that they were LGBT, however we reacted with that, but knowing it, it's interesting how we just have gut feelings that might be going on. Like, believe yourself.
But some parents are totally blindsided, and that's an okay path also.
That's true.
So it's okay to be completely blindsided. I'm in these different groups. I'm in the I'll Walk With You, and which is a great group, even though I'm not a believing Mormon anymore. One of the things I see often is some of these children will start messaging to the parent, I don't want to go to church anymore. I don't feel comfortable at church anymore. I don't really like going to young women, or I don't really like going to young men. And we have in our Mormon culture such a thing of, like I'm in charge of your spirituality as a parent, and so I'm going to make you go. And I would say, please listen to your children when they are messaging those things to you. There might not be a Barbie under the bed, but there is inside of themselves, there is something saying, this doesn't feel okay to me. I don't feel safe here. Please listen to those children when they're messaging that to you.
And you're right. It's sometimes they signal, sometimes they don't. And the path that some kids go on is internalized shame turns into self-hatred, which turns into depression, which can turn into depression. When depression gets really bad, it starts manifesting as psychosis. So there's this downward path where it can get very dark. And underneath your eyes, my oldest, he's 17 now. The first thing that I heard when he was about 12 was he came out as queer. And then it was 6 months later that the trans issue came out. But by that time, my son had internalized a lot of stuff. And I say this because he grew up in a home, where gay people were in and out all the time. As a matter of fact, when we were leaving the church, we went to the Unitarian Church for a year at the same time. We did them both. And one of the men working in with the youth was a crossdresser. Now he didn't identify as homosexual, but he wore women's clothing. So my kids had always been exposed to this, and even so, they internalize self-shame to the extent that hospitalization and suicide attempts were on the table. And I don't, for folks listening out there, you can't recognize that as a failure of parenting, because you're completely off the reservation with this stuff. It is really difficult to navigate and know what to do. Because the only thing I could tell my kids all the time was, you can love whoever you're going to love, you can be with whoever you're going to be with. None of us are concerned. It's not a care for any of us. But they still have to get past their own sense of shame.
I think that's a great thing about Mama Dragons, because as a parent, just in general, I think you feel a lot of guilt over things that you do or you don't do. And coming to Mama Dragons and just hearing those other stories, it kind of gives you permission to move past that part where you're like, I feel so guilty about what I did when they first came out, or I feel so guilty about how I did that. That can really impede your ability to mother your child. So you have to forgive yourself and move on. And Mama Dragons is really good at helping people do that. When you know better, you do better. And we try to really support people in that.
And one of the great things about Mama Dragons is you are guided to other resources and people that can support. And kind of back to what you were saying, with my transgender child, there were no signs. There were no Barbies. There were no skirts. And this child had spent a couple weeks in the hospital and then 5 months. And even after me thinking I was so pro-LGBT with my being a Mama Dragon, this child would not say a word about feeling transgender dysphoria until after 5 months in the hospital. And I think it isn't all about what we do. It's about the world we live in, which is why we do what we do, to try and make the world a safer place. but they have to be somewhere at some point where they can feel completely loved and accepted. And whether it's at Encircle or whether it's at Pride, they're always feeling like there's people that don't like me and what do they think about me, and they've internalized those messages for so long that it's so deep and so hard for them to just thrive. And at, you know, suicide's a huge issue, but there's also a lot of kids who it just derails their lives. They're still alive, but it derails their academics, it derails their social life. And so for them to thrive, they have to be in places and feel completely loved and accepted for exactly who they are.
Well, and this is one of the criticisms, to underline what you're saying, with Pride. The reason it's called Pride is because the folks who are involved in the parade spent their life feeling shame. Yes. And the message, the script that needs to be flipped is not only it's okay to be LGBT, it's wonderful, it's great. You know, and I know one of the questions that, and I want to hear kind of the things you get when people say, well, what, how should I react when I hear this from my kid? You should hug them and tell them congratulations, and what a wonderful path in life that can be too, that these are all. But it takes a long time to get to that point. And most of us, when we find out, it's shock. And as parents, we're going to feel like we failed, like we did something wrong.
I think the celebrating thing is so important, and that's one of the things I absolutely love about Mama Dragons. We have, especially like during prom season, homecoming, we have these moms that post these pictures of their kids with you know, a date, a same-sex date, or you know, or a gender nonconforming outfit on, or a trans daughter wearing a beautiful dress and makeup and hair. And it's a place that this is celebrated. And this would be great if this would translate into the real world, where people can put those kinds of pictures up and everyone would love them. But on Mama Dragons, at least, they can feel like everyone is just so happy to see their child happy, and it's just, oh, they look beautiful, oh, look at their date, is adorable, and the things you want, because everyone wants to hear that stuff about their child. And in your life, your other life, you don't hear that stuff for your child. And it's a beautiful thing on Mama Dragons, it really is.
That's fantastic. Gay prom is something that happens here in Salt Lake, and it's fascinating. The Generation Z, or whatever they're called, the kids under 22, they are not like us at all when it comes to this stuff. And it's really interesting because this has been a fight we've been fighting for a long time for LGBT rights. They don't see the categories the same way we do. My oldest son, who is straight identifying, he took his friend who is a transgender male to gay prom. They don't care as much about these distinctions. And the benefit is it's going to get easier for the frontline fight that some of us had to fight. The kids are not in the same boat. But the reason I bring it up, we have to be careful here, because sometimes we want the kids to be gay or straight. And they might bounce around, especially I've noticed that the you know, biologically female, to do that a little bit more, which is fantastic, which is wonderful. I wish that we all had that space as we were growing up and discovering our own sexuality, to be in safe places to explore a little bit. But we have to be careful about pigeonholing people and saying, are you gay? Are you trans? Are you this? Are you that? Because it ain't that simple.
We do really like to categorize people. I mean, it's a thing. And then, because you can kind of know how to react if you categorize. So I think a big education, especially for me being a mom of a gender nonconforming kid, is it was really, really hard to let him go on his own path. Like, just let him do it. I wanted to be like, are you transgender? Are you gay? What's happening? That was very, very difficult for me. But what happened for me was living in the space where I just had to question and I just had to deal with my questions kind of turned into a beautiful thing for me. And it gave me that time to just sit with all my feelings, and I'm a much better person having sat with all of that and having lived with that ambiguity. So I think that's a thing too, that you just might not know. You might just have to sit with that.
So obviously I'm not a mother. What other elements define the mother's experience that you guys deal with in Mama Dragons?
Well, I think we touched on this a little bit earlier, but one of the most difficult things is just feeling isolated and in your regular world, in my neighborhood and my community and my church, it feels isolating to have children that you can't talk about, that people are so uncomfortable with their reality that you just don't talk about it. Or everyone's, like in church things, a lot of times they're talking about their kids and their missions and they're doing this and they're doing that. And I was biking with some friends and I thought, I can't say a word. Like, I can't talk about how my kid's in the hospital right now and my gay kid is here. And people who I had been friends with before, it creates some distance sometimes if they're not able to hear you and you don't feel safe talking to them. And I'll admit that a lot of it was probably me pulling back. But having, joining a group like the Mama Dragons, where you know that, I think it was the first time in my life when I went to that retreat where I felt complete love and acceptance, no matter what anyone's kid had done, no matter what I had done. I just felt like I was in a space where everybody was okay. And I'd never felt that before. So to join a group like that and just feel that and know that it's okay, it just takes away some of that anxiety and that fear and makes it so we can be better moms for our kids.
And our group is, you know, started as Mormon moms, but we have now branched out and we have Catholic moms and evangelical and moms of no religion whatsoever. And it's just that people are wanting to find that community, wanting to come into a space where they can be completely them, their child can be completely accepted. Because even in homes that are completely affirming, we still, and even some religions that are universal Unitarians are, we still do come up against society. I do think Generation Z is better. But even within Generation Z, there still is continued prejudice. I think it's going to continue to move and be so much better. But moms still want, community is how we thrive. And they want that community. They want that feeling of like, I am in a place where I can be completely myself, my child can be completely accepted as who they are.
You look pretty righteous, so I'm not sure you're going to understand this simile. But most podcasts are like beer. You have to drink a lot to get that buzz. The Sunstone Magazine podcast, on the other hand, is like whiskey. Small glass, big buzz. That's because our podcast isn't about interviews, conversation, or witty banter. Rather, it presents audible quality recordings of Sunstone's best articles, essays, fiction, and poetry. Do you want to hear what the best LDS minds have to say when they say it perfectly? Then this podcast is for you. Listen to some of our free episodes at patreon.com/sunstone, and then join us for a weekly shot of the best of Mormon thought and experience. And yes, you'll be able to drive home safely afterward and get a temp recommend if you want.
We've been sort of aiming the message at people who might be struggling with this directly, but there's a lot of people out there sitting in the pews who may not know anybody, they don't have any children, they want to be supportive, but sometimes, you know, you're looking at that kid over there and you're like, oh, he's gay. And I want to be an ally to him, but I don't know what to say. So for both parents, for mothers of LGBT kids and LGBT kids, if you're sitting in the pews, what's the best way you can offer your support?
You know, I think in general, including people that are outside the box, as Mormons, we're not very good at that. We kind of suck at that. So including just all people that are outside the box, you know, if you're seeing the gender nonconforming kid, hey, I really like whatever it is, or hey, I really like that. One thing that's really easy to do is to identify yourself as an ally by wearing rainbow gear, or putting your rainbow pin on your church bag, or putting that sticker on your car, or whatever it is, because people, when they see that, I mean, it's why we fly our pride flags, right? We're a safe space. We're a place, like, we support you, you know? And so that's an easy gig. But just using inclusionary language is often important as well.
And I think that's so important, Lori, because we I've heard that, you know, we saw the suicide rate of teens rise in this state after, you know, after the exclusion policy, that could have been part of it. They often say that the LGBTQ teenagers can be the canary in the coal mine It's where other kids that don't feel like they conform or they belong or that they're outside of the box, that even if they're not LGBTQ, that they are now, they don't feel as safe either. They feel like this other person isn't okay being who they are. Maybe I'm not okay being who I am. And it can affect everyone's mental health. So I think Lori's right on, where you do reach out to everyone expressing whoever they are in whatever way that they're expressing that. And that's really wonderful.
And I think sometimes believers think that they can't show too much love and support. They can't bake that cake because it would go against their religious beliefs or show that they're doing something against what the church would want. And I would find with people, oh, we love your son, we love him, but they'll go with you to the line where they think, well, the prophet said, and here's the line. And I think someone who wants to be supportive needs to think really deeply. Like, if they really believe in a belief about Jesus and what Jesus would do, I think there's plenty of space to show that love and bake that cake and show up at that wedding without violating any of their deep religious beliefs. And I think sometimes that becomes an issue. At least for me, I felt that. I felt like people loved me and my kid up to a certain point, and that's where they drew the line.
Yeah, I think that's an absolute real thing, that the people and believers struggle with that. They want to be inclusive, but they don't want to violate their faith tradition, and because there's a lot in that. It's not, we sometimes simplify it as just saying, oh, you know, obeying the brethren or whatever. But it, for a lot of people, leaving the church or even leaving part of the church and staying in feels like a betrayal, in a very serious way that takes, even though you know in your heart and soul what you're doing is right, you still feel divided. You still feel pulled apart, which again is why having these connections are so important. I know when my child first went up to the hospital, even though I was, you know, well connected, I stopped podcasting, I was well connected into the ex-Mormon world, I had a lot of friends, I felt so alone. I didn't know where to go, partly because, I mean, even me now mentioning these experiences, I'll tell you honestly, dear listener, feels like a violation of my child's privacy. But I think that my child is actually very open about all this on Facebook, probably more so than I wish he was. But you feel very protective, very extremely protective. That's why the name Mama Dragon didn't come about, because you're going to, it's your young, your kids, you're going to. But we don't know where to go. We don't have those support networks. We don't know how to express that level of vulnerability on social media. Which is why it's important to meet in the real world. What do you guys do besides Facebook?
Yeah, we do definitely have real life meetups. We all talked about the importance of real life meetups. And so we do that. There's a million opportunities to do that in Utah. We're very, very lucky because that exists in a lot of different places.
The church inadvertently creates great support structures because there's such lack of support in there, that you really are gay. Salt Lake City is a very gay-friendly place.
It's
there's
crazy.
Great therapists, great, just all sorts of resources for the kids.
Yeah. So one thing that we have done as Mama Dragons is we've created regional groups. So not just for somebody in Utah, but maybe for somebody someplace else that can have a regional group in Washington and California. And then those regional groups are encouraged to have meetups, whatever that looks like. If that's like, hey, I'm going to meet at Olive Garden at 11 on Tuesday or whatever, come and let's do that. Or if that looks like meeting up at some other kind of existing structure that's already happening, I'm going to Pride or I'm going to Encircle. That's there too. But we encourage those regional groups so that they can address things that are happening in their communities that are specific to their communities.
Pride's coming up. Do you guys have any activities planned?
We sure do. We do a hugging booth, Hugged by a Mama Dragon. And we've done that about 3-4 years now. And we encourage every regional group to do that in their town. We want to support LGBT folks and their families and let them know that we're out here doing the same thing they are doing by supporting in that way.
This year, Pride has a children's village, and so they've asked us to help staff that. So that will be, it's not a drop-off babysitting thing. It's you can go and participate with a child with some really fun activities. So we're going to be involved with that. We also split up and we support LGBT LGBTQ-led organizations that march in Pride. So we won't march in Pride as a group, but we will support other groups. Everyone kind of splits up and marches with Equality Utah, Affirmation, PFLAG, Encircle.
Mormons Building Bridges.
Mormons Building Bridges. Yeah. Yep, all those. So everyone has their own special place in their heart for some other LGBTQ-led organization, and we're there for them.
So if you show up Sunday morning at Pride, you will find the group that you can march in the parade with, no matter where you are.
Absolutely.
With Mormons Building Bridges, there's people who march in their church clothes. You know?
Yes. I did that one year, my first year.
Yeah, I did that my first year, too. Yeah, if you don't want to wear church clothes, then there's other groups you can march with.
So we're kind of winding down a little bit. I want to give each of you kind of an opportunity to give your advice to the world. You know, after you've been through your individual experience, and each one of these is individual, very much so. What would you tell those out there who might need to hear your voice? Go ahead, Lori.
Okay, I want you to believe that wonderful things are in store for your child. When my son was small, I was afraid in a way that I can't even describe for him. I was terrified for him and for what life would be like for him. But he's 20 years old, he's in college, he just finished study abroad in Paris, and he is living a more charmed life than I could have ever even pictured for him. Like, all those things that I thought were gonna happen, either they did and we got through them, or they never even happened. He got to go to prom with his boyfriend. Believe that good things are in store for your child. As you believe it, it will come true.
We're not there yet, but I'm believing it. So I guess what my advice would be is to let go of some of the things you think you know. You're afraid because you think you know what this means. You think you know what God wants. You think you have so much understanding from what you've heard your whole life. And let go of that and start learning and listen to people's lived experiences. For me, it was the Mama Dragons hearing about their kids. But after that, it was hearing from other LGBT people and their stories. And that changed everything for me because I knew nothing as a cisgender, straight, white, LDS woman. But once I started hearing other people's stories, it changed my heart in ways that couldn't have happened any other way.
My advice would be, if I could go back and hold my babies in my arms again, I would just want to feel like I don't know you yet. I don't know who you are, and you're going to tell me that. We're going to figure that out together. I'm not going to put these expectations on you that you're going to be, Mormon or religious at all, or that you're going to, date boys or date girls or wear certain clothing. I would let go of all those expectations and just say, we will figure out together who you're going to be. And if you don't have those babies still, those children that you have, and those adults, just continue to have that feeling of let you show me who you are, and I will love that and accept that.
All wonderful words. The only thing I would add is that it's okay for you as a parent to mourn the child that you thought you were going to have. And once you do that, once you get past that, then you can have the relationship with the child that you do have, with who they actually are. And that's a blocker for us, because we think, okay, they're going to go to graduate school, and they're going to, they're going to do all these things, and that's all just a myth. And we're all just human beings, and we need to walk our own path. The second thing I'll say is, as somebody who, unfortunately, I had to face down the darkest of this, I spent a year on suicide watch. I don't know if you can understand what it's like to go to your child's room every morning and not know if you're going to find a body. The reason I bring that up is not for any kind of pity, but to tell you, it gets better. There might be some dark, so for some people this is a very light thing. For other people this is a very dark thing. And I've been through the darkness, and it gets better. My 17-year-old, he has a boyfriend. He's as happy as I've seen him. He is engaging life in new ways. And you're going to feel, if you have a situation like mine, you're going to feel desperation. You're going to feel the darkest of emotion. But there are people out there, and you guys are doing a great thing for this, to help these kids, to help these parents, because it doesn't have to be this way. It should be a thing of beauty. It should be a thing of joy. And what I love is that you guys are making a real strong step in moving our whole culture that way. I can sit in here and complain about the church at the end of the day, and it's not going to make the kind of difference that you all are just by being who you are. And I just want to express my gratitude to each of you here and to the organization in general.
Thank you.
Well, I don't know if there's anything else to go there. It's a tough issue, but it's beautiful. You get to see, I think, what humanity really is and what we're really capable. And it's not that the men are going to go over here and do this, and the women are going to do this. We're going to can peaches, and we're going to ordain the world, and we're going to save everybody. Salvation comes from recognizing that we're all different, we're all in different places, and we can still all come together, you know, for the love of God's children. Well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. I know this isn't the easiest thing in the world, but...
Thanks, John.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.